WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. This is where... the conversation starts. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will serve as your host this evening. We'll get things started right after we do our final check of traffic today. We will speak with Plymouth County Commissioner Sandra Wright. Now, I know. Normally, we reserve the very first segment for the Statehouse Report, but... we're trying to add in something new, kind of like a Plymouth County update. We'll probably try to do that maybe every 3 or 4 weeks, and maybe we'll have like a rotating county commissioner joining us, or maybe we'll have the county treasurer, or maybe we'll have the register of deeds. Who knows? Just trying to, you know, do something a little different to best serve our listeners. So we'll speak with Sandra. We'll get her take on things. It's her turn to give us a little bit of a county update, so we'll do that. Following our discussion with the commissioner, we will speak with Dr. Nathan Chomolo. He actually is going to be our expert, our medical expert, to talk a little bit about COVID-19 vaccinations for teens. We're talking the ages 12 to 15. We'll talk about that. We'll get his take on it and see what he thinks. And hopefully some of the information he gives, anybody who may be on the fence as to whether or not they should have their child get the COVID-19 vaccination, maybe it'll help give you more information in making any type of decision like that. Hour number two, we will speak with Richard Rosen. Now, Richard, as you know, he's one of our premier sponsors, but Richard is also a very successful business person. Not only have we had him on because he has two restaurants that we talk about on a regular basis, McGuigan's Pub and the Patio at McGuigan's, but also he is successful in the area of real estate. So we're going to get his take on the spring real estate market, how things are going, his thoughts on the dip in housing stock. And dip is probably a strong word because it's been over the past few years. If you ask anybody who sells real estate, the first thing they will tell you that there's a big problem in is having enough houses or homes to be able to sell. So we'll talk with Richard about that. And we might even talk a little bit about some of the latest things. Sorry, I can't have him on without talking a little bit about his restaurants, but we will do that. And then finally, we're going to have someone from a broadcast house joining us, none other than the program director, who serves as Rob Hackler, who serves as program director for not only 95.9 WATD, but 1460 AM WBMS and 1510 WMEX. We'll chat with Rob a little bit about what has it been like, operating or overseeing the operations of these three radio stations during COVID-19. And now that we are, it looks as though the pandemic is in the rearview mirror. So some of the things looking forward that he hopes that the radio stations can get back to doing. So we look forward to talking with Rob about that. And let's also not forget Rob, an award-winning host and producer of the South Shore's Morning News that you get to hear Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. So don't want to leave that out as well. We're going to step aside for a moment right here as it is time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways. Being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. There's a crash inside the O'Neill Tunnel at Purchase Street, blocking the two left lanes. Then you're inching along on the expressway southbound from the tunnel down to the on-ramp from Freeport Street, then slow from Granite Ave to the split. Northbound is sluggish from Adams Street up to Freeport Street. Route 3 South spotty delays from the expressway to Route 18. 93 South moderate volume from Logan Express to Route 24. Northbound's tied up from Route 138 to Route 24. Route 24 South is busy from 93 down past the Horse Bridge. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week at Whole Foods Market, get two Health Aid original single serve kombuchas for $5 through June 1st. While supplies last, plus Prime members save an extra 10%. Learn more on the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the & Son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
The first segment, as you know, traditionally, I said this a few minutes ago, and I'm repeating it. You, the listener, know that you can usually tune in at 6:20 every Monday night, or most Monday nights. And at this particular time, whoever your local representation is, senator, representative, or even a constitutional officer working up at the state house, governor or auditor, will join us and chat with us on this segment. But we sometimes will break from the norm and try to interject or have another conversation that is more local. It could be a select person, someone from a select board, could be someone from the county level. And I feel as though as of late, we're trying to have a regular county update. And we've kind of come to the point in the rotation. I want to say just a couple of weeks ago, we had the chairman of the county commissioners, Greg Hanley, on. Prior to that, we had Jared Valenzuela. Actually, Jared was kind of a 1-2 punch, where not only did he come on for a county update, but then we had some kind of a Beatles discussion, which he is very well-versed in. Not only was he well-versed during that program, but you tune into his show on Wednesday nights, the JV team, they're always talking Beatles. But this week we are joined by County Commissioner Sandra Wright. Commissioner, welcome to the program. How are you?
Mr. Tachi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? So I like to think of myself as someone who makes sure that I'm inclusive of all government entities, all people. So I try to have regular conversations with the fine folks in Plymouth County government, whether it's yourself or one of the other commissioners. How are things going on the county level these days?
Kevin, we are so busy and doing so much for the communities. It's just, we just feel like, you know, there's just not enough time to be able to accomplish and do everything. And it's such a great feeling to, you know, build this rapport, which we, you know, have been trying to do for such a long time since I came in 2010 when it was completely broken. You know, we had, you know, a structural deficit of $1 million. Now we're, you know, we have stabilization, you know, for $1 million. We've come such a long ways. It's just, you know, overwhelming and so gratifying.
How are things going? What are the biggest projects to date for the county? The county commissioners has been the CARES Act because of COVID, because of the funding that was provided by the federal government. The Plymouth County government, the county commissioners, the county treasurer sought fit to make sure that the membership, the constituents of Plymouth County, got 100% of those federal dollars, fearing, in fact, that maybe if they were distributed by other entities, maybe that wouldn't be the case. How has that been going to date?
Well, as you probably know, in the very beginning, it was not very popular. And, you know, it was frowned upon, I just have to say, probably everybody in the community, you know, the 26 towns, they just didn't think that we could handle it or do it. And, you know, we got a lot of bad publicity. And, you know, we never ever questioned the fact that we could do it. And, you know, Treasurer O'Brien is very prudent in, you know, what he brings forward to the commissioners, and knowing, you know, he has a plan. And and it's easy for us, really. I mean, you know, he's the one that really leads the CARES Act, and you know, we stand and support him on it, even though we're a big part of it. But, you know, we worked, I can really say, and I think I can speak, you know, for former County Commissioner Dan Plotter and Greg Hanley, we never had a question about whether or not this is something that we should take on. We knew that we would be able to do it. The plan, putting it together, well, that was a little, you know, little anxiety there. But, you know, we certainly knew, you know, Tom was knowledgeable, or the treasurer, I should say, was knowledgeable enough to have already put that in play. And, you know, we're grateful for everything he's done. He's, you know, a really hard worker. 80 hours a week is probably being very kind to him, but he probably works 120 hours. So we've never had a question right from the beginning that this is something that, you know, it's our responsibility. It's really what we should be doing out in our communities. And, you know, we needed to step out in faith and just work with our communities and see where it took us. I mean, who would ever look at what we were thrown into with the pandemic? Nobody knew left or right, you know, up or down, where anything was going, anything was being done. So I think we've done a fabulous job, and I say that because I hear from the towns in the communities, you know, and thanking us for everything that we've done for them, whereas, you know, other counties didn't take the monies, and, you know, they're really having a tough time. They're struggling.
So the next evolution of federal funding to help folks be able to build upon what was provided in the CARES Act and help to stimulate our economies after having, you know, a pandemic, a global pandemic, kind of grind life to a halt, kind of like a jump start. I feel the CARES Act was, and ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan Act, being put forth by the Biden administration. Is there a role to be played by the county commissioners on this continuing effort to infuse revenue and projects to help our society just kind of maintain and get back to the way we were?
You know, we just brought this up at our meeting, and there's so much involved in that, so much liability, so much unknown. There's so many moving parts that are going to be involved. We don't even know what they are, it really is yet. You know, we're in the talking stages. I feel it's something, personally, myself, I feel it's something that we can take the task on, depending on what it is and what it's going to involve. You know, I know that there's water, sewer, broadband, and many, many other things, and that's today. Tomorrow could be different, as we all know. But I think that, you know, with the team that we have and what we're able to do for our communities, and all our communities have really asked us to do it. You know, now this is something that we're going to have to get into the nitty gritty and really find out what they're looking for. Because as I said at the meeting yesterday, I don't want the communities to say, yeah, Plymouth County can, you know, take on all that liability and all that work and effort and everything, because it's going to be a real problem for the towns to have to hire people to do these. They're all going to hire their own accountant, their own, you know, lawyers, their own this and that, which is going to be very expensive. I truly believe that this is something that we should look seriously into doing for our communities. I know the towns want us to, but as I was beginning to say, I don't want them just to turn it over to us to take this on without any skin in the game. They have to be, you know, completely involved in it and be able to work with us. And because there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come up that might not be acceptable, and you know, we're going to have backing and support, and just like we did. And you know, before I wanted to mention, when you know, doing the CARES Act, it was so unfavorable, but once I think we got our legislative delegation on board, and once they realized what we could do for their communities, they were right beside us. They went to every check presentation. They supported us. They, you know, feel it was a great thing that we did for their communities. And their communities, you know, made out by it. And I can't thank our legislative delegation enough.
You're just tuning into this program. We are speaking with the Plymouth County Commissioner, Sandra Wright. She is our guest for this particular segment, and we're talking everything county government. I want to talk about a couple of exciting initiatives that are in the works right now. I think one of them has to do with fire training. If you can give us some of the nuts and bolts or the framework of this, what exactly is the county doing in regards to helping our firefighters be all that they can be?
Well, we're in a new day and age now. Police and fire, they need more training, more sophisticated training than what they've had in the past. I know that, you know, once being a firefighter myself, I understand, you know, what goes along with that and what it takes to, you know, things just change every single day. And there's such a tremendous need to be able to train these guys and women out there. So what we have is we have 11 acres down at the Bridgewater Farm, Bridgewater, you know, prison, where the prison is. And they came to us, the state came to us and had asked if they could come up with a contract and have our land so that they could do more, you know, training for their men. So right now we're, you know, just waiting to see how that goes. We there was an offer put out, and we just are waiting for them to sign the contract. I'm very very passionate for fire and police, and you know, police is another whole entity where they're facing so many different things and what their rights are and what's being taken away from them, and you know, how they train. You know, people don't understand when you get that call how your adrenaline starts, you know, just racing. You know, you don't know whether it's a fire call, you don't know if you're going to a cardiac arrest, a trauma, you don't know if you're going to a SIDS baby, you don't know if you're going to you know, domestic violence. And same with the police, you know, every time they get a call, they get the call, but it's not always what it is when it's, you know, first called in. So you have to be prepared. And I think, you know, for the police, I'd like to do maybe, and I'm only speaking for myself. I don't know what their need. I know what their needs are, but I want them again to have, you know, some skin in the game and tell me what they need, whether it's tactical, whether it's military or law enforcement training or what. So, you know, right now we're just in those talking stages and we are going to be putting out analysis for a gun range somewhere. I'm not sure where it is. I'm thinking Plymouth, but there are a lot of other places that I'm looking at. So, you know, everything's on the table, being looked at, and just trying to do for our communities. And this is what we should be doing.
If I could ask you, Commissioner, you're kind of talking about the fire training and a setup like that. I've had a great rapport, not only with police chiefs, but with fire chiefs. And I believe with fire chiefs, there is a training center in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The problem is that it's a half a day's drive to the other part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the western part of the state. Is the idea to have something for South Shore firefighters and their command staff to be able to do here locally and be within the vicinity of their home firehouse?
Yeah, it's right now they have one up in Stowe, and I think they have one in Springfield, if I'm correct. And like you said, you know, it's a day's travel and it's costly to the town. So, yeah, I, you know, would love to have a Plymouth County fire training, or it wouldn't be under us. It would be really under the state, you know, bringing a training down here in the southern part.
And has there been a study done, or is this we're in the talking stages before we launch into any studies to see where the placement would be and if it would be utilized by all of the fire departments in the county?
Yeah, we spoke with the people down there at the Bridgewater Prison. Like I said, we have 11 acres down there, which they want to utilize our land for the training. And that's what we're, you know, in agreement with, or are, you know, going to be in agreement. I haven't heard the latest on that yet. Excuse me. So that will be where the training is. You know, they're just using our land. And so going forward, I know that, you know, when I first went out and spoke to all the fire chiefs, you know, they were looking for the fire training. Now I'm kind of hearing that they want to do, and I'm not really sure, I'm probably speaking out of turn saying this, but I think that they're kind of concerned of the type of training and if they can, you know, if they're going to be able to use the facility for in-house training or not. That's not something I'm going to micromanage. You know, we were asked to, you know, come forward with maybe a parcel of land and that they would be able to utilize. As far as the nitty-gritty, that's up to the chiefs.
Okay. We got a couple of minutes left here in our conversation. Anything that we haven't touched upon in regards to the county commissioners, county government, that you want to take a moment to discuss, whether it could be budget related, whatever you want is in your purview that you want to take a few moments to talk about?
Well, I think that, you know, county government has, you know, come a long ways, as I said before. Little something that, you know, really frustrates me is when I continually hear, you know, whether county, comes or stays or goes, or, you know, we're never going to be able to please everybody. We try to please as many as we possibly can, but there are just those that just are anti everything, and they're not going to ever like county government no matter what we do, how much money we give them. And I wish we could just get beyond that. We're here. We're not going anywhere. And we're only going to get stronger and better in everything that we do for our communities, because I strongly feel that, you know, it is our responsibility to help and take care of our communities in any way that we possibly can. We have a great team. The three commissioners are doing great. We all have our own initiatives that we want to bring forward. I probably have too many, and, you know, I need to stop my brain from thinking about things that we could be doing when we have so much on the table right now. But don't forget, you know, we have the OPEB liability that we're doing. We have the vehicle bids that we do. We, you know, run the Mayflower Health for the municipalities. And right now, each time when I go out and speak to a town manager, I talk to them about other things, regionalizing, being proactive in the communities, and see where we can help the towns. Because, well, I shouldn't say the towns are hurting right now financially, because they're really not. But I think that there's always things that we can do for them. And it's just a matter of finding out, you know, what are your three things that you would like us to help you with? And we're really not asking the towns to give up anything. We just want to elaborate and make better.
So I would ask you, do you feel that, is there enough, is there funding or money in the county's 2021 budget remaining, or going forward in your 2022 budget? Maybe it's time to do a positive marketing campaign about the benefits of Plymouth County government. Is that an idea?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's always on the table. And, you know, we don't know with the ARPA right now what kind of funding. I mean, there's just, it just seems to me, seems like there's a lot of money flowing out there. It's just dispersing it, you know, in the way that we have to disperse it according to what the rules are. I think that's something that we need to look at in the upcoming years. I just brought up something the other day at the meeting, which is really concerning to me, is all this hacking and, you know, cyberware and the firewalls and our IT. That's one place that I really feel that we need to look into. Do we need to go to the next level, because we're getting bigger and we need more support in that area? Because even that, you know, every single day is different. I know that there's a couple of towns that have already been hacked, you know, and they're having problems with that. So that's something that we need to look into. I did ask the Register of Deeds, and I asked the Treasurer's Office and the Commissioner's Office to give me a report on what their needs are in IT, and can we make it into maybe one entity, Plymouth County IT? Or do we need all three? I don't know. But, you know, like I said, it's just a different world today.
He is Plymouth County Commissioner Sandra Wright. She has been our guest. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Time for us to step aside for a moment. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
With the COVID-19 vaccine being widely distributed amongst adults, you know, recently there was a push to go for the younger population, the 16 plus. Now there's a conversation about recommending it for children, kids from 12 to 15. Joining us to talk a little bit about this recommendation We have an expert, Dr. Nathan Chomolo. He is based in Minneapolis, in Minnesota. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So the first thing I would ask you is, right out of the box, talking about the vaccine's safety and efficiency, we know that depending on the particular vaccine that you take, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, folks get different types of side effects. First and foremost, let's talk about the safety side of things for these vaccines for the younger population, 12 to 15.
Yeah, so these are very safe vaccines and very similar to, and you know, parents can expect experience very similar to other childhood vaccinations. And so in the studies that were completed, you know, the most common side effects in those 12 to 15 year old teens was pain at the injection site, fatigue, headache, chills, muscle pain, fever, joint pain. This is consistent with what we've seen in older teens who've gotten the COVID-19 vaccination, as well as what we have seen in other vaccinations. And so really that part of the experience is something that parents should be very familiar with.
It's interesting. You kind of ran down a couple of the side effects that I think some of us may have experienced. Myself, when I got it, I got a little fatigued with the second shot, but it was nothing to really worry about. I just kind of relaxed a little bit that day. But the side effects that can be seen in, you know, the 12 to 15 year age range, how do you manage them as a parent? How do you manage it as compared to managing your own side effects?
Yeah, well, and I continue to, you know, remind parents that, you know, as a parent of a toddler myself, you know, we all have experience with helping our children manage these very mild side effects from vaccination. And so, you know, it's having, you know, some fever or pain reducers like Tylenol or ibuprofen, you know, at the ready. It's, you know, having some time so that we can give them the, you know, tender loving care if needed. Because as you know, you know, what we've seen with older teens and adults is that these are really self-limited, meaning that they'll go away on their own, usually within a day or two. They just need a little bit of time. And it's much preferable to the kind of suffering children can experience if they actually were to get COVID-19.
So the thing I would ask you is, what have we actually learned when it comes to tolerance from at least the older side of our kids, you know, the 16 plus? What have we learned?
So as far as tolerance, you know, you would be very similar to what you're describing with adults, in that most folks actually don't have any side effects at all. And those that do, it's very mild and very manageable. And, you know, what we know is the efficacy is fantastic. You know, for the trial for 12 and 15, it was 100%, meaning that, you know, kids who got the vaccine didn't experience COVID-19 at all. And so when we're talking about really protecting our children and teens from suffering, if they're exposed to a virus that continues to circulate at a very high level in our communities, you know, vaccination is what a really powerful tool. And I'm really glad that we have that now for COVID-19.
What's your understanding as to where we stand right now as to trying to get to herd immunity, which my understanding is somewhere around 70%? You, as a medical expert, as a doctor, probably know a lot better. How close are we to that trend, and how important is it that we are ticking down the list of different age ranges to make sure that we're vaccinating everybody?
Yeah, well, I mean, children are important part of our community. And when we're thinking from kind of a public health lens, you know, we need to really make it so that there's very little places that the virus COVID-19 can go. And so vaccinating our children is a real important step towards that community immunity, and getting towards that number where we think it's 70, maybe 80%, but we don't know because we're still learning about the COVID-19 virus, what number is absolutely needed. But really, based off what we know so far, 70% is really the goal that we're aiming for. And, you know, we're a ways away from that if we include children in the tally. You know, when we look at 16 plus, you know, nationally, we're, you know, getting like around 60% and approaching 70%, but every community is different. So every state's different, every county, every city, even down to the zip code level at times. And so it's real important that we all do our part to, you know, get the information we need to feel safe about vaccination for ourselves, for our children and our families. So going to getvaccineanswers.org is a great place to do that. And then make a plan to really protect ourselves, protect our family, and protect our community.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the trust factor, because I think that while I think we are doing a great job in getting most of our citizens vaccinated and inoculated, that there's a trust factor with some folks. I know people who are anti-vaxxers. It's like, absolutely not. The government is pushing me towards sticking a needle in my arm. There's something ominous about that.
So I really differentiate vaccine hesitancy, which is something I'm very familiar with as a pediatrician and talking to parents about vaccines every day in my practice, versus with COVID-19, I believe we are experiencing more vaccine deliberation. And that is folks who have honest questions that and are just looking for answers. And so there's a kind of trouble with access to information in addition to access to the vaccine itself. And some of that information is even things about cost. Like there's still roughly 10% of folks that don't understand or don't realize, I should say, that the vaccine is free of cost and that they won't get a bill for it and they won't get charged for it. That is a piece of deliberation that folks take into account with these experiences of side effects that have been shared. Folks have to kind of weigh whether they have an employer that's supportive of being going and having some time off to recover themselves, or when we're talking about children or family, to be there for their child as they recover. And so understanding that there's employers need to understanding that there's things like tax breaks available to them if they do provide that sick and paid leave. And so I think there's a lot of questions that folks have that fall more into, you know, the practical side of things and, you know, the fact that we're still learning about COVID-19. And so those just need reliable answers from trusted sources versus the, you know, vaccine hesitant and those who have decided to be anti-vax, you know, those are conversations that we can continue to have, but some folks, as you rightly state, aren't going to ever be interested in the vaccine.
Yeah, if you're just tuning into our conversation, we're speaking with Dr. Nathan Chomolo. He's a medical professional and an expert, and we're talking about you know, the next phase of vaccinating our population, the 12 to 15 year age range. Talk about the pride of your profession and the technology that we were able to get these, not just one, but multiple vaccines, you know, and that there's still work being done for booster shots.
Yeah, so the vaccines were developed at a rate that we haven't seen before for a number of reasons. One is just the investment in people power. And so I often point out that there probably wasn't any other time in our world's history that the world's greatest minds were all thinking about the same problem when it came to, you know, vaccine science in particular and science in general around COVID-19. And so just having that people power and brain power invested in finding this, the fact that governments opened up their wallets and said, whatever is needed, we will fund it. And you can take down the barriers that have usually existed around developing a vaccine, around costs. And so that was not an object or a barrier. The fact that we're in a global pandemic, I think folks don't realize that to actually know if a vaccine works, you have to have tried it and trialed it in an area where folks are actually exposed to whatever is infectious you're trying to protect them from, right? And so previous vaccines took time because you'd have to wait a lot longer to get a number of people exposed to whatever you're trying to protect them from before you knew and had the robust data that we have on its safety. And then speaking of its robust data, it was really tested and trialed in a really diverse group of our community members, much more so than most of the medications that we take on and rely on for our health. Would see roughly about 5% of Black or African Americans in those trials, 1% of Hispanic or Latin Americans in those trials. In these trials, we saw 9-10% of Black or African Americans, 15% or more of Hispanic, Latin Americans. And so really, there's a number of reasons to be proud of how we were able to bring this this vaccine. As you said, multiple versions of the vaccine. And then again, using a technology that had been in development for over 20 years, but hadn't had its opportunity to really get tested this way. It had been used to help develop an Ebola vaccine before, but hadn't been used for something that was as widespread and really seeing that the power it has to both help keep us healthy and safe, but as you said, also then be adaptable as if we need to adapt to variants rising or have booster shots. The benefit of this mRNA technology is the ability to do that in a much more timely manner that allows us to be more responsive and hopefully stay on top and eventually get defeat COVID-19.
It was interesting. You mentioned about the variants, and I think that's another important aspect that we should share with our audience about the importance of making sure that your 12 to 15 year old is vaccinated because of the mutation of the virus itself. We see what it's doing in India, in parts of Europe, and this concern that we could see different variants if we haven't already in this country. Let's talk about the importance of making sure that your child is vaccinated and protected from these variants.
Yeah, this is just another reminder that children are an important part of our community. And so if the virus has a place to go in our community, it's going to continue to replicate. It's going to continue to try to adapt and change. And there is a possibility that one of these variants can develop that makes the vaccines we have less effective. And then that could, start us back at zero almost when it comes to vaccination. It could put the elders in our community and those with medical comorbidities at risk at once again. And so really in an effort to really decrease the spread of the virus, I think it's real important to get our children vaccinated. But, there's also potential with variants that they could be more infectious or make folks more ill. And so even though, many children have a mild illness, that could change with variants. And then even, those who have mild illness, in my practice, I've seen and continue to see, teens who've gotten COVID recovered yet months later still aren't back to full activity. They're still having troubles with shortness of breath or endurance, and so can't do some of the things that they usually like to do. And so this kind of idea that children aren't at risk of COVID-19 is false. And so and vaccination is, again, one of the ways we help protect them from that suffering. And really that's, as a parent, that's what your job is looking out for your kids' best interests.
Probably a couple of more questions. And again, I want to thank you. We've been speaking with Dr. Nathan Chomolo. He has been our guest talking us through why you shouldn't consider getting your 12 to 15 year old vaccinated. What does the term emergency use authorization mean? What does that exactly mean? I've heard that before.
So emergency use authorization is an way of applying, a company can apply for use of a medication or treatment through the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration. And this allows it to be used in the broader markets at without waiting usually the 2 years that many studies usually require before coming before the FDA. And the emergency use part is that the evidence from the trials are that the benefit is so great to individuals that waiting actually puts us all more at risk. And so we've actually seen EUAs used before for cancer treatments, for example, that have really been shown promise to help patients and wanting to get that to them before their time is up. And this is very similar situation where we're in the midst of a global pandemic. The study information shows the benefit is a really timely need to get that to folks. And so that's the EUA. And we know that the COVID-19 vaccinations have all been approved under the EUA, but they're continuing to be, you know, monitored. And so when you go through EUA, it's not that we just stop and say, okay, you're good. You know, you continue to be monitored for safety and efficacy. And that is what is being done with our COVID-19 vaccinations right now as well.
Is there anything that I haven't asked in regards to this subject matter about getting our 12 to 15 year olds vaccinated in and across not only the Commonwealth of Mass, but across the country?
Yeah, you know, some of my work is really focused on vaccine equity, right? And so we know that not every community has been impacted by COVID-19 the same, that in particular our, you know, Black, Indigenous, Hispanic, Asian American, Pacific Islander communities have had an excess burden in different parts of our country, whether it's hospitalizations, cases, deaths from COVID-19. And so when we talk about, again, these numbers of getting to 60%, 70%, you know, if not every community is there, then we'll continue to see that disproportionate burden. And so really, again, trying to make sure that we get information to all our communities so that they can, you know, make the best decision to keep their community safe so that we can all get out of this pandemic together. And so going to places like getvaccineanswers.org is real important to get that latest information to make that informed decision.
Doctor, I want to thank you so much for your time and sharing your knowledge and wisdom in this area.
You're welcome, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
It's going to do it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We are going to step aside. And when we come back, hour two of the program. You tuned in to 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Tiny of Tiny Sun's Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny & Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing, gimme that ding.
So gimme that ding. Tiny & Sons Glass. We'll fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Plymouth 400 Inc. continues their mission of education and commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth's founding with a new television series called Plymouth 400 Conversations. The program will focus on authors, filmmakers, artists, and poets who discuss how the 400th anniversary commemoration influenced their work. Each episode premieres Thursday nights at 7:30 on PAC-TV, but available online for everyone to see the following day. Despite the pandemic, the 400th anniversary commemoration continues into 2021 with great virtual programming now, including this fascinating new virtual series, and live events later in the year. See what Plymouth 400 Inc. has scheduled. Shop for Plymouth 400 anniversary merchandise to share with friends and family, and catch the most recent episode of Plymouth 400 Conversations. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we're back for hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, we will speak with the one and only Rob Hakala. Rob, who is the host and producer of the South Shore's Morning News. He's also the program director of not only the flagship station, 95.9 WATD, but also the smaller stations, 1460 WBMS, as well as 1510 WMEX. Joining me is not only a very good friend, but he is a proud sponsor of this radio program. And I'm picking his brain for a couple of different reasons this evening. Mr. Richard Rosen is my guest. And Mr. Rosen is a very successful, he's an award-winning businessman. He has been recognized by local chambers of commerce for some of his work when it comes to stimulating economies and places of employment. He also has a successful real estate company that has done well. First part of this conversation is talk about real estate and what the spring market is like. Second part, we got to get caught up on what's going on at two of my favorite restaurants on the South Shore. That's McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's. Richard, how are you?
I'm very well, Kevin. How are you tonight?
Was that a big enough build up for you or what?
Well, the one thing that you forgot is let's not forget that I am also, we are also, we have an award-winning cable TV show about bees. I just had to throw that out there.
And not only is it locally that it's award winning, but it's also regionally as well.
Correct, and the show is on nationally.
That's right, yeah. And it's last I remember, we have over 40 communities around the country that actually that salivated the chance to watch you and your antics with your bees. You were the bee man. You and Glenn Cornell and all the other folks that we have, Richard Veazey, the folks that we have who join us on a regular basis to talk about bees and some of the great things we learn along the way.
Pretty amazing. But anyway, I'm great. And how are you?
I'm fantastic. So the first part of our one-on-one here is to talk a little bit about what is going on with real estate here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, probably more specifically the South Shore. Knowing that you have been, you know, a realtor for many, many years, I just want to kind of pick your brain and you know, as someone who, you know, not only deals in selling homes, but, you know, homes that are newly built and other projects that are ongoing that you are well versed in.
Well, the real estate market in general is right now, I would describe it like the Wild West. It's not like anything I've ever seen before. I don't think it's like anything anybody's ever seen before. You know, the pandemic turned everything on its head. You know, certainly the restaurant business and our lives, but it has turned the real estate business on its head. The real estate market, the way that I've always known it, the way that it's supposed to work, is that you have young first-time buyers that want to go out and buy a house. And the house that they're looking to buy is from people that have lived in it for a while that want to upgrade to another house. And those people might be moving into an over 55, or they might be moving away. And that's really how the real estate market has worked for decades. Over the last several years, and, you know, going back to even 2007, 8, 9, there's been many people sitting on the sidelines. There was a pent-up demand that is unbelievable. Then comes COVID, and people want to move out of the city or wherever they're at. And the fact of the matter is people aren't selling their houses because of COVID and whatever other reasons. I mean, so I did a little bit of research today, and I check the new listings, multiple listing service, MLS. You know, we go on it every day and look to see, you know, what's sold, what's come on the market. So historically in Whitman, there are, I think the average was 54 houses on any given day are on the market. So today I checked, and this morning there were three listings in the town of Whitman. and one condo. But that's what's been happening for the last several months. There is no inventory. So I checked Abington, which also has a little bit, the average is a little bit higher than Whitman, 55. Abington had five houses on the market and one condo. So I checked a couple other towns, Carver. I checked Carver only because I am doing a subdivision in Carver of 14 houses. And other than a couple of the new listings that I have, or the new homes that are going to be constructed in Carver, there's five listings. So then I checked Marshfield, which I thought might be interesting to you and the listeners. But I didn't know, because I don't think I've ever really checked Marshfield, because you can go by every town in the state. You go in by county, then by town. That when you go into the Marshfield MLS, it's broken down into several different areas of like Brockton would be East Brockton, West Brockton. Marshfield is broken down into Brent Rock, Duxbury Beach, Fieldstone, Green Harbor, Marshfield Hills, Ocean Bluff, Wrexham. So it lists them in different segments. Now, that whole area, you would think that there are a ton of listings. That's why I point out all the breakdown of these. In the entire town and subset, there are 24 listings, which is not very many. And they range in price from $399, which I don't remember what it was, to $3.9 million. So that has created the lack of inventory, and I'm sure you hear everybody talking about the lack of inventory, has created this insane demand for houses. Mm. You know, the condo project that we're just finishing up at Whitman, the 27 units, I sold those. Of course, the price was very reasonable. And, you know, the first-time buyers, you know, at $325, $340, $350, you know, when I was young, you know, I'm going to sound like my father now, who probably paid $2,500 for his house. You know, I think I paid $25,000 for the first house I bought. Now they're $350,000. But there is no demand. I mean, there is no inventory for the huge demand. Because now it's not just kids that live in Carver that want to move up and stay in Carver. Now you're competing with people from Plymouth, Kingston, Boston, all over the place coming into this area. So it's created a real nightmare for people trying to buy a house. I feel badly for people that are trying to buy a house. I mean, I could tell you stories that are insane.
I would ask this, and that is that how long, what's going to break this supply and demand? Because this has been something that's been ongoing for the past few years. I remember the governor when he did his state of the state address, and the first thing that he noted, the biggest problem was, is that there was a housing stock crisis, that there was not enough housing in the state, and it was driving up the prices of homes, and it was causing problems when it came to economic development and folks who wanted to relocate to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Well, part of what he was talking about, I believe, and I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to, are more multifamily dwellings, condos, apartment buildings. The regular housing stock is going to be a problem, because there isn't much coming online. And the people that should be selling and moving so the next in line can buy their house, there's a real problem. I wish I knew how things are going to work out. But I can tell you this much, that, you know, I do a lot of new construction. And, you know, developers are always hated because it's, you know, nobody wants you in your, you know, my backyard. But without this new construction that's happening in places, it would be a bigger problem than we currently have. I don't know how it's going to end. I can tell you that with the interest rates as low as they are, the demand is still out there. I mean, you can get interest rates for 2.75% fixed for 30 years. And even if the world goes to hell, I was talking to a CFO of a major bank recently. We were talking about the interest rates. They still have the ability, and they have built in the ability to drop interest rates another full percent. That's a point and a half, you know. But that's like worst case scenario if things, you know, really get bad. I don't know where it ends, Kev. I can tell you this much. This kind of a subdivision, I put 14 lots in the market, and in a week, we reserved 3 houses. And there's crazy things going on out there. So these people that are trying to buy houses, the word in the street is that you have to offer more than asking, which it's true because it's nuts. You know, I put a house in the market recently, and I put it on for 300. It was a flip by a friend of mine. He bought a house, he fixed it up, he put it on the market for $375,000, which is very reasonable. It was a very small house. It might have even been 2-bedroom. But anyway, put it on the market one morning, and by that afternoon, we had 12 showings. That's how crazy it is. So that morning, a couple people looked at it. A guy came in, a person came in, it was $375. The person came in and said, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you $410,000, no home inspection, no mortgage, and we'll close in a couple of weeks. So the seller said to me, what do you think we should do? I said, well, I'd finish out the rest of the showings we have for the day, see what happens, and if nothing else comes in, take it. I mean, you're not going to get a better offer. I just sold another house where the people had to sell their house. They put it on the market, subject to them finding suitable housing. Well, they were supposed to close in March, and they couldn't find any place to move to. And finally, we had a house listed that they bought. They wanted to waive the appraisal aspect of the mortgage contingency because that's another whole ballgame that causes problems. So if you have a house that really is worth $400,000 and you sell it for $440,000 or $430,000, whatever it is, and the appraiser comes out, looks at it, the appraisers are in a tight box right now because they don't want to put their license on the line going, what really is this house worth? So these people said, we'll waive the appraisal clause, which means that on that $400,000 house that they've offered $430,000, if the appraisal comes in at $410,000, they're going to pay the other $20,000 out of their pocket. There's crazy things going on. And I mean, I'm sure that you could find a lot of realtors that will tell you nightmare stories of things that are going on.
Yeah, and we're speaking with Richard Rosen, one of the most successful businessmen on the South Shore, not only a man who's done real estate for many years, whether it's, you know, reselling homes or new construction, you name it. You know, he's always busy. Every time I try to track him down, as many times he's, you know, in the middle of having conversations, as well as a successful owner of 2 fine restaurants in downtown Whitman, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes here. You talk about the cost of homes. You know, is there a concern that we're going to see people are going to be overpaying for their house before you know it? We had a time when we saw a lot of people who had homes and who had mortgages that were underwater. Is there a chance that people are going to overpay for this? And then when the housing market settles back to earth, their homes, they won't be able to resell at what they bought it for.
So that's the million-dollar question. Do I believe that there's going to be a downturn in real estate? Yes, because there is. About every 10 or 12 years, it happens. I mean, I've been through 3 major real estate crashes. And I hope by the time the fourth one comes that I'm well retired or I'm not doing it anymore. But no, it happens and it's going to happen. The issue is how deep of a pullback will it be? But, you know, the other thing is those people that were underwater, if you weren't moving and you stayed there, didn't matter. It doesn't matter what the value of your house falls to if you're not selling it. If you decide that you're going to move, that's when the problem comes up. Because what you have to hope is that the market goes back up. For instance, I owned a condo in Halifax. I bought it from a person that was going to be foreclosed, and they came to me and said, I don't want to get foreclosed, you buy it. This goes back 2 real estate crashes ago. And I said, yeah, I knew the person. I bought the condo for fair market value. They were going to be foreclosed. They got out. I bought the condo, and the market crashed. I paid fair market value. So, I mean, I bought it just before the market crashed. I was underwater with that condo for a decade. However, I had it rented, so it didn't matter. I wasn't going to sell it. I didn't care what it was worth. I knew that I could get X amount of dollars a month for rent. So it didn't matter to me because I wasn't selling it. But then, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 years later, I still own this condo. A tenant was that I had a great tenant for a number of years, was going to leave. The second tenant was going to leave. And I saw what the house was worth, and I said, sell it. And at the end of the day, I made money. But had I sold it prior, I wouldn't have. So, I mean, that's what you have to hope for, is that somewhere along the line, if you're not going anywhere, you're going to recoup your money. But crazy things happen. I mean, we know that there's going to be another real estate down here. It's just a matter of when.
If you'd offer any suggestions to my listeners, and again, folks, remember, these are just suggestions and not, paid advice here. But if you'd offer any real suggestions to anybody who is thinking of getting involved with this spring market and looking for a home, or if they are someone who is potentially looking to put the house on the market, what would you offer just for simple advice, common sense advice to either buyers or sellers?
So it's an absolutely spectacular time to sell your house. However, you got to move someplace. You don't want to sell your house before you find someplace to go, because you could end up not having any place to live. Obviously, you're going to make it subject to finding suitable housing, but if you sell your house, other people are going to want to wait while you try to find a house. That becomes an issue. But it's a terrific seller's market. I mean, if you've got a place to go, or if you're young and you just bought a condo and you can make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 and you can move back home with your parents, worst things in the world could happen. If you're a buyer, there's a lot to be careful of. And it's not, if you're a buyer trying to buy an older house or a used, dwelling, how much more over asking do you want to pay? Because certainly you're going to have to pay more than asking right now. And how much do you want to spend? And do you feel comfortable getting out that far? Can you afford? I mean, first and foremost, you need to be pre-qualified and find out what you can afford. That's number one in any transaction of a buyer. Go to a bank. Don't do any mortgage stuff online. I am a big opponent of these online mortgage companies because they're nothing but trouble at the end of the day. I'm an old-fashioned guy, I guess. I want to do business with a bank that I can walk to. I mean, that's the old adage. I'll go to a bank where you know someone, but don't go online and find some cut-rate mortgage company and do it. That's dangerous. But make sure you can afford to buy. Make sure you can afford to pay what you want to buy. And with that being said, if you're going to buy a house, I would certainly do, if you make an offer and you're a first-time buyer, make sure you do a home inspection. Extremely important. If you're lucky enough to have your offer accepted, you want to do a home inspection. If you can afford to pay anything, then you're probably not a first-time buyer. You're an astute investor, which is a whole different ballgame. But for people that, it's the biggest expenditure they'll ever make in their life, and they don't want to screw up doing it.
So as we segue, we thank you for your knowledge, your insight on the real estate market. As I segue to talk a little bit about your restaurants, I would be doing a disservice to you as a friend if we didn't have a chance to talk about the new addition to the Rosen family. Would you like to gush for a few moments about a new family member?
I am the very, very proud grandfather. First time, by the way, of a baby girl, born Mother's Day. It was a great gift to my wife. 8 pounds, 1 ounce, 21 inches long. My daughter, Rebecca, had this beautiful little baby girl, and everybody's doing fine. Thank you.
Well, congratulations to Becca and to you and the missus, and of course, Auntie Danielle as well. Let's not leave Danielle out of the mix.
Auntie Danielle is a very proud girl.
And she does a heck of a job as being the person who kind of oversees your two restaurants, along with you. You're, you know, one of those owners who takes a lot of pride in going table to table and seeing how everything is going. How are things going at your two great restaurants in downtown Whitman?
Well, first of all, Danielle does run both restaurants. Dad just goes in and does what he does best. He schmoozes. The last thing you want me to do is be in the kitchen or behind the... I mean, you know, I can make a drink for myself, but, you know, you want to keep me out of those places. We have survived the pandemic, Kevin. You know that I was like the COVID Nazi through this entire thing. We closed the pub for people coming in for dinner, but we did an incredible takeout business. We flat out closed the patio for some months. We've reopened both places, obviously, and both restaurants are doing well. We went from 25% to 50%, and now we're at about 60%, 65, and next weekend, I think it is, that we're going to be able to go to, you know, 100%. I know that you know that I had my foreman cut me a 6-foot-long 1x3 piece of lumber, and I was going around and measuring the distances between the tables to keep them 6 feet apart. And, you know, nobody came in without a mask. Nobody walked around without a mask. The hostesses, the hosts and the hostesses cleaned every table, every chair, every time someone got up. And, you know, at the end of the day, it paid off because we never closed because anybody got sick. We never had anybody get sick. And the people that were there dining in the restaurant saw the effort that we were making to keep everybody safe. And we stayed kind of busy. And it's been good. I mean, it's been a tough experience, but we are one of the lucky ones. I mean, there's been such an incredible amount of restaurants that have closed. So yeah, we're reopened now that weather is turned, you know, really nice. The windows in the patio are open most of the time now, and we're killing it over there.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that during the pandemic, that myself and my missus, we made regular trips to get takeout from McGuigan's, and your staff performed above and beyond. And you know, while we weren't able to sit in the ambiance of one of your fine restaurants, we were still able to still have the aroma of some of the great food that your chefs and your folks prepared for us to be able to eat at our own dining table. It's great to be able to get back out. Now, just this past, just I want to say a little over a week ago, you brought back something that has been a long favorite of mine. Heaven forbid I didn't go the first Sunday, first couple of Sundays that I was open, but I will say that one of my favorite things about the patio is brunch.
Brunch is back. We opened and we're back. And it was, you know, we had only been open a couple of weeks for brunch before the pandemic hit. So it's kind of like we had to retool it and redo it all over again. And it was very successful. The build your own Bloody Mary is just crazy, with the little cards that we give to people that want Bloody Marys. They can pick what vodka, what, I mean, these things have shrimp and celery and burgers. And, you know, I watch people drink those things, and it's like, how do you eat after that? Yeah. We had someone tell the bartender they ordered one, and they said that if they ordered that in town, it would have been $30. And I think it was $14 or $15 at the patio. But brunch is my favorite, and we have a new breakfast cook. And, yeah, we're excited. The thing that that you probably don't know, and that I'll announce, is that hopefully within the next few weeks, I'm replacing the windows at the front of the pub. So those windows will also open. So both, I mean, obviously it's not quite as big and wide as the windows in the patio, but the pub windows are going to be open. So yeah, it's going to be really nice.
Yeah, there is something to having when the windows are open and it's a beautiful, whether it's a spring day or even in the summer, late summer, early fall, there's nothing like having a mixture of not only a great meal in a great establishment, and also having a little bit of you know, beautiful day kind of, you know, floating in while you're enjoying your meal and a drink.
I mean, the patio, obviously, the whole building practically opens. The, you know, the windows, each section is 14 feet.
Sure.
So we have a lot of open area. And the beauty is, if you're in there on a really beautiful day and it starts to rain, you don't have to go anywhere. We got the roof over your head. So, you know, it's worked out very well. It's worked out very well.
We got just a couple of minutes. We got actually like 2 minutes and we got to wrap up here. Anything that you want to say in closing in regards to the patio or McGuigan's Pub that you want to share, or maybe just give them information in regards to if they want to take a look at the menu or some of the drinks that you're offering?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to take this opportunity for anybody that's listening that has used our services for the last year and some change since the pandemic started. I just seriously want to, I want to thank those people. People have been extremely generous to our employees in terms of tipping. You know, so many servers got hurt badly. I mean, we kept 13 people on the payroll in the pub the whole time. And now we have, you know, the full staff back in both places. But people have been extremely generous. And I just want to thank anybody that has been to either restaurant in the last year. And if they want to go online, they can go to thepatioofmcguigans.com and the same with mcguiganspub.com. I suggest going on to our reservation system at the patio to Resi, or you can go to the patio at McGuigan's and find reservations. Extremely important to try to get to try to make reservations to get in. I mean, it's so bad that I couldn't get in there for dinner one night, and I had to see a mutual friend of ours was having dinner with his wife, and I said, "Hey, can I eat with you guys?" I mean, it was the only way I was able to eat my own restaurant. So it's been busy.
Richard, I want to thank you again for your time, your knowledge, and sharing it with my audience.
It's my pleasure, Kevin, anytime.
There he is, Richard Rosen, not only a successful businessman as someone who has been in the real estate business for many, many years, but also the proprietor of two fantastic restaurants, McGuigan's Pub and the Patio at McGuigan's in downtown Whitman. We're going to step aside when we come back. Joining us is Rob Hakala from the South Shore's Morning News right here at 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield.
Wow. Better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Plymouth 400 Inc. continues their mission of education and commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth's founding with a new television series called Plymouth 400 Conversations. The program will focus on authors, filmmakers, artists, and poets who discuss how the 400th anniversary commemoration influenced their work. Each episode premieres Thursday nights at 7:30 on PAC-TV, but available online for everyone to see the following day. Despite the pandemic, the 400th anniversary commemoration continues into 2021 with great virtual programming now, including this fascinating new virtual series, and live events later in the year. See what Plymouth 400 Inc. has scheduled. Shop for Plymouth 400 anniversary merchandise to share with friends and family, and catch the most recent episode of Plymouth 400 Conversations. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, so we are back for our final segment of Monday Night Talk. I have to say is, you know, we do, I try to do my best to put together a radio program that is something that you can you can sit and listen to, not only from the very first segment, whether it's the State House report or not, to the final segment. We spare no expenses here. The staff at Monday Night Talk heard on 95.9 WATD. And again, we want to try to finish up every week our show strong. And I feel that probably this week we're finishing up the strongest that we have, because my guest so happens to be the program director, not only of the flagship 95.9 WATD, but also WBMS 1460 AM, which is Brockton, Boston, Brockton, Marshfield. And where all the good guys are, WMEX 1510. Rob Hakala is the program director, and he's also the host and producer of the South Shore, the award-winning South Shore's Morning News, Rob and Lisa. Welcome back to sit down and have a conversation with me, Rob.
Well, it's great to be here, Kevin. Thanks for having me back on the program.
Well, you're kind of my boss, so, you know, I have to have you on once in a while and have these talks. I'm kidding. You're a great friend. You've been a mentor to me over the years, and I've come to you for advice. I believe that around a year ago, as we were enduring and learning about the coronavirus, COVID-19, that I asked you to come on and kind of talk a little bit about, you know, here you are, you know, a radio, a media outlet with multiple stations, you know, and you're in the middle of a pandemic. What was it like? We had a very good conversation, because again, we were still learning at that point in time, you know, what could we do? The information that was being disseminated to listeners, checking back a year later, here we are. They're telling us that as of the middle of June, things should return to normal.
I know. I can't believe it, Kevin. Yeah, you're right. Before we went on tonight, we were kind of reminiscing about where we were a year ago and how strange it was. And radio, just like every industry, was impacted in a significant way. Obviously, you know, having three commercial radio stations that survive on advertising, to especially with two of them fairly new, returning to the airwaves in WMEX and WBMS to look for additional sources of revenue was so difficult. And also, I was thinking, Kevin, over the past year, all the events that didn't happen. And that's what I tried to explain. A lot of the revenue in terms of having the South Shore Music Circus or sports games or the South Shore Conservatory or the Plymouth Philharmonic or the Atlantic Symphony. None of those clients were able to have their concerts or conduct their services, and that impacted, obviously, the advertising. And, you know, I was thinking we finally, it seems like, maybe, and to my surprise, I don't know about you, it seems like we could be going back to normal sooner than I expected.
I think we're going to go back to normal, but I think this is just me being a realist. I feel that we could end up, depending on how we all handle this and depending on the variants, because I think that's the big thing. The variants and how the virus mutates is going to be something we're going to have to watch. And how quickly will the folks who brought us Moderna or you know, the Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson, who brought us the vaccines, are able to get us a booster shot, or any research that's being done. I'm still thinking that there's a chance that we could see a little regression, and then maybe we might have to go back to wearing masks. I don't know if we're going to do the total, we all stay at home and work from home, although I feel as though our lives have changed so drastically that people now have we realize as a society, and I think globally we've realized that we don't necessarily have to go to the brick and mortar to be productive, that we can actually do it in our feety pajamas at home and still live our lives, but yet still be a productive member of society.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some, you know, truth to that. I was telling a story last week on my own show about one of my relatives, my aunt, who told you know, me that her office is never reopening. So I said, you know, when are you going back to work? And she said, we're never going back to the office. They're having everybody clean it out. The office is just being closed. They're never going back. And then I see other companies, though, Kevin, at the same time now are starting to come up with policies on, you know, when can people come back to work because they do need them in the office. Or, you know, and some, the third choice is maybe they'll do a hybrid and say, you know, sometimes it works, but in other times you need collaboration, you need to be in the same building. And I think that's true for radio in some way, for the stations, that there are some things you could do remotely, but I don't believe everything can be done remotely, and that we will probably have to get more stuff back in studio, I hope.
Do you feel, not only as somebody who generates content for your listeners, your, you know, weekday radio program from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m., your content had to change for the pandemic. Do you feel that you can slowly shift back to the way things were prior to March 14th or 15th of 2020? Or is it a matter you're still going to have a mix of what you've actually started sharing, or what you've been sharing with your listeners?
Well, yeah, I would like to go back to some of it. I think what I miss, Kevin, is the in-studio interviews that we used to do with a lot of our contributors and guests, and we would get to see them on a weekly basis. And, you know, as you were talking about, everything, you know, we were talking about a year ago, almost happened suddenly, you know, immediately. I remember going to a Celtics game 1 month, and then the next game, there were no more Celtics. They closed the garden and they shut down all the NBA and all the sports. And we couldn't have some of our contributors come in to the show. It just, obviously, we had to go to a more safer method in having people call in or use Zoom or some other form of communication. And I miss the face-to-face conversation. So I hope, you know, I think, Kevin, like you were talking about, though, with variants, and I just want to, you know, make everybody comfortable. I think, I'm not sure what everyone's level of comfort is, and so I'm going to offer people to come back when the time is right. And you know, I'm fully vaccinated, and I hope most of the people in the radio station are, and eventually we can at least offer that ability to come back in. And I'd like to do that, and obviously I would also like to do more being outside and meeting some of the people in the community again. I think I miss that a lot, and I think that's been tough for our new stations to gain any traction where we can't have a presence in the community, Kevin.
Again, we're speaking with Rob Hakala. Rob, not only the host and producer of the South Shore's Morning News award-winning program, and a staple of 95.9 WATD. A lot of information is generated from it. Also, let's not forget this, there's a news component to it. I think it's worth noting that, you know, the pandemic also helped generate some awards for the radio station, as the radio station, the news team, was able to win some Murrows, three Murrows, 2021 Murrows. Talk to me about, you know, you being a member of the news team and being a part of that collective effort.
Well, Kevin, yeah, thank you so much. I was very pleased to hear that news, that the radio and television and digital news association awarded WATD with three regional Edward R. Murrow awards. So that's the best in all of New England, and the station will compete at the national level, which is some great news. And that's breaking news, and also to overall excellence and best newscast. So Christine James and her team, and it's really everyone involved for overall excellence. There were pieces put in there from a number of different people. I think that's great, Kevin, that the radio station was awarded. And I think you're right that people certainly were seeking out more news during the pandemic. They wanted to be informed. They wanted to know what was going on, what was being closed first, what were the different levels of the virus in terms of what were the stats in terms of the deaths. And also, what was the information that the governor was trying to get across? So we've been taking some of those press conferences almost the entire year. And then now with the vaccines, I think a lot of the questions have been, you know, until just recently, where can I get the vaccine? How can I make an appointment, and so on and so forth with what's going on in the different towns? But I think it was a very good thing that the radio station did receive those three awards, and I'm really proud of everybody. I was happy to just help with some of the editing behind the scenes before it was sent in to be judged, and I'm happy to kind of oversee things and give a listen to it. But it's really just all the people that are involved. You know, we have so many talented people, you know, for what, you know, is considered a small radio station. But as you know, Kevin, we have a pretty good sized staff.
Yeah, which has evolved over the years. Again, the news department has evolved over the years under the guidance of managing news editor Christine James. The radio, you know, the music department has evolved. We've seen different faces from, you know, Kathy D retiring, and now you have Liz Raven has returned to, you know, the radio station, and you know, Audrey Constant, who used to be down the street in Plymouth, now, you know, a local voice that is recognized during the middays. We talked to me about the evolving of this radio station and still surviving during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kevin, because one of the things that our owner, Ed Perry, had talked about, and obviously you're aware as well, and your program is a great source of information. It's been wonderful to hear all the different, I think, you know, having the direct line to the state house is great. You have every legislator on in our area on a regular basis. And then all the special guests, you've been also very good about covering the issues that have been important to the city of Brockton as well. So I want to include you as also being a source of information. So I want people to know that, you know, we love Monday Night Talk. I think you're right in terms of what Ed Perry was talking about in surviving, is that yes, we were impacted economically, not so much maybe as every restaurant. We didn't have to shut down per se. I have never not come in to do the show. I've been doing the show in the studio the entire time. But certainly we were impacted with the loss of revenue. And one of the things that our owner, Ed Perry, did not want to do is have to, as some other radio stations may have had to do, is to furlough people or cut back staff. And in fact, one of the things that we did is, as you may know, is actually added newscasts onto the weekend on Saturdays, and to have a presence 7 days a week on the radio to provide information. So we did have to make some cuts and some other behind the scene things. And obviously we didn't expand the two other radio stations, WBMS and WMEX, as he originally planned. But I will say that at least we were able to keep our flagship 95.9 WATD on the air with no real significant changes. So you did have local voices on with Lisa and myself in the morning, and you mentioned Audrey in the midday and Liz in the afternoon. Then of course you and the rest of the great talk hosts at night, and you know, almost 7 days a week we do have some live programming. In fact, the majority of it's live and local.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Rob Hakla. He is the program director for 95.9 WATD, but more so, the entire radio station conglomerate, not just the flagship station, WATD, but also WBMS 1460 AM, and of course, WMEX 1510 AM. And you had mentioned about the two stations, the BMS and MEX. And it's tough to be able to kind of navigate during times where revenue is down. But the you know, Ed Perry was able to keep the radio stations on the air, maybe do a little bit of downsizing with staff. I mean, now that we're coming out of the pandemic, do you expect to have a conversation in-house as to what to do moving forward? I mean, will BMS continue to be to play program? It's not only shadow what ATD offers, but I know on the weekends there are specialty shows that are on BMS, correct?
Yeah, there are a few. Mainly Sunday now has been kind of the day where there are some special programs, including one on country oldies. There's also a special religious program and some other oldies programming. And, you know, I think we would like to expand that. I think it, you know, makes sense in that you can hear ATD in Brockton anyway. It would be nice for Brockton to get separate customized programming to really focus on the city and, you know, what does the city want? What talk shows would they like? What issues would they like, you know, to have? And I think, you know, that's something that Ed wants to do. And he wanted to cover more local stories and politics and sports. But, you know, we really have yet to really get out into the community yet.
Now, just recently, I believe you had an interview with the one and only proprietor of the Halls of Justice, Larry Justice, as there's a little bit of a celebration. 1 year anniversary of maintaining the oldies format. Talk to me about having that signal back and that it actually has a following.
Yeah, I would say definitely, Kevin. I think out of, you know, the two stations we brought back, because I think, you know, with the Brockton station, that really needs more community involvement with WBMS. But for WMEX, you have letters that already mean something very important. It's the same frequency as 1510 that people grew up with. And people do remember, you know, Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg and other names, including even Larry Justice, who was on the original WMEX, and all the big DJs of the time playing the great rock and roll music. So for Ed Perry, that was a station that he grew up with. And so there was a certain nostalgia and attraction to it. And that's why he resurrected that station, was off the air. It was dead. And he brought back 1510, and now it's on all the time. And it is playing, you know, music from the 50s and 60s and now into the 70s as well. And it was very exciting. Last week, they just celebrated 1 year since it went back on the air as the new WMEX, bringing back the great music and local personality, Larry Justice, who people remember in the Boston market. And so they celebrated last week. And you're right, Kevin. I mean, I've been seeing some of the stats for their Facebook page, and also what's interesting now. And I think even the older listeners, a lot of them, may be using smart speaker technology to listen to their favorite programming on a smart speaker or a computer. Now, if you want to hear the rock and roll music on AM, get a little static. If you want the nostalgia, you can do that in 1510. But as I try to tell people, the music sounds great too. It's all on digital as well. And so the streaming numbers have been very impressive for that station, Kevin, in 1 year of being on the air.
And knowing that they were previous attempts to resurrect 1510 in different formats. You're a radio guy. I mean, I was privy a couple of times to you and a former WATD alum who is now at CBS News in New York, Steve Burns, and he had the two of you talking about some of the signals around the country. Yeah, you're kind of a person who really enjoys radio. You follow what other stations do and what other signals do. You know, what are your thoughts as to the longevity of this particular format where there's been past failures at MEX?
Yeah, I mean, that's my concern. I think, first of all, Kevin, you're right. I mean, there were some big groups and individuals that had you know, much more money than we did, that tried to do, you know, a big sports format, and they had the Celtics for a while, and I imagine that contract was a lot. And then most recently with talk programming, and they had some very big name personalities that were on there, and they tried to do that as well. But nothing seemed to attract enough revenue. You know, we've been trying to keep the cost down in terms of not having, you know, unfortunately, as much of a live staff as we'd like to. We also have, I think the good thing that we have this time around is that we're running it as part of a structure of an existing building. And so all these three radio stations, I think, you know, besides ATD, I think if you were going to put WBMS or WMEX back on the air and you just owned that one station, I don't think it would work. I think, you know, unfortunately with the economy today, Kevin, you know that to do things in scale or to try to run things as you can by sharing resources. And so I think running it out of the same building gives us an advantage now this time around. Will music work on AM? I don't know. I think a year is too soon to tell. But I think, you know, getting people used to listening in so many different options, as you know, we're on a lot of the big apps now, and we have the smart speaker train, so you can listen that way. There's no reason that people can't enjoy the music in another manner and still enjoy those oldies.
The thing that I find interesting, and you brought it up, I'm glad you did, is just, you have a lot of folks who I'll give an example, the Brockton signal, you know, BMS, formerly, you know, WXPR. Prior to that, the legacy signal was WBET. It was WBET since its, you know, inception back in the late 40s and playing Brockton Boxer football. And I hear from, I the other day I took a phone call from a city official in Brockton. It's like, oh, when are you getting the Brockton radio station up and running? I go, it is up and running. It is. Well, when's it coming to Brockton? Well, I says, well, you can hear it in Brockton. We actually have an FM translator right in your backyard. I believe that the tower that it's broadcasting is in your backyard, you know, West Bridgewater. So but what about the building? And it's like there's such ownership and a proprietary feeling when it comes to a local entity like a radio station. How do you fight that with and get people to buy in that, yeah, just because the building, the brick and mortar building is not in your community, it's not in the, you know, the square footage that you call the city of Brockton or whatever the community is, that it still can operate and still be known as a Brockton radio station?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Kevin. I think there is going to be some disadvantage to not having a building that people can drive right up to. I think that's something that people like to do, to feel that a radio station's in your community and that you can just, you know, I got to get something on the air, I can drive over there. But you're right, the infrastructure, the physical tower in West Bridgewater, and it covers the city of Brockton, and I'm glad you brought up the FM translator, which is a beautiful signal at 101.1 FM. It covers the entire city.
Yep.
Clear, so that no matter, you know, what, whether the sun is up or down, I know the AM signal is hampered at night. It doesn't go very far. And that has been eliminated by getting a translator. You can run sports, you can run talk shows, you can do music, and it comes in a great FM. So everything is physically being broadcast right in the Brockton area. So it's very strong. In fact, you can't get the FM in Marshfield. You can't get that FM signal. It's too far away. But it covers the city. I think the main thing, Kevin, will definitely be in the future, maybe having some satellite studio. That may be necessary. I know our owner, Ed Perry, initially had a lot of plans. You know, he wanted to do all the sports. He talked about partnering with Brockton High School and setting up a studio there. I'm sure you know the story about Massasoit.
Yep.
Setting up a studio there. He mentioned, I'm going to have a microphone at City Hall. There'll just always be a microphone there so the mayor can get on. Now, all of those things, as you know, haven't been built. And with the pandemic, when the schools were shut down, a lot of that stuff didn't happen either. Will it happen in 2021, 2022? I hope so, because I think, Kevin, you're right, that the station will never become a viable community station until we're really involved or have some direct pipeline into the community.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with the great Rob Hakala. He is the host and producer of the South Shores Morning News. Rob and Lisa in the morning from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. Also, Rob has additional hats he wears, as he is the program director of three fine radio stations. Not only the flagship station, 95.9 WATD, but 1460 AM WBMS. And of course, 1510 WMEX as well. We got a couple of moments left here with you, and it seems like there's never enough time to talk shop with you, Rob. Even when we're in person and we're not on the airwaves. Looking forward, what are you looking forward to being able to do and flex your muscles this summer with your radio program?
Well, I would like to get out more. You know, in the past, we would take the show out. It's kind of a big undertaking to take the morning news program out on the road. One of the big things that, you know, we used to love to do is the Marshfield Hills General Store remote. That was canceled in 2020. And at this point, it looks like we won't be doing that unless, you know, they turn things around. But we have a fun time. But 2021, at least at this point that I'm talking to you, is officially canceled, but I don't know. They said the fireworks wouldn't happen, and maybe they will. So stay tuned on that. But I would love to get out, Kevin, and I'm hoping that really for all the radio stations, we need to get more into Brockton for WBMS. I'd love to go and talk to more people in Brockton. And then for MEX, it's really just trying to, you know, the listener base is there. People are passionate about the radio station, but how do you turn that passion into getting sponsors that stand by and say, you know, I love the oldies music, I love Larry Justice, And all that's great, and that costs money. Can we have businesses that can support and keep that on the air? And that's going to be the challenge, and that will determine, you know, whether these stations stay on in the future in the current form they're in.
Yeah, I'm going to give you, just before we wrap up, I'm going to give you a couple of Monday Night Talk quick hit questions for you to answer.
All right.
I actually stole this bit from one of my favorite radio shows. Okay. First one, knowing that you're an ice cream lover, cup or cone?
For me, it's a cup, because a cone, I'm a slob, Kevin. I get it all over me.
And can you tell us, honestly, how many cups of ice cream have you ate in one sitting, especially if you went to like a fundraiser or something?
I can tell you that, because I used to go to the Super Bowl and I would keep track of the cups that I would get. And I think the record for me is, I want to say, 14 cups, maybe 15. Kevin, I found that as the years go on, I can't quite get to that anymore. I think that my 20s was my record.
Okay. What is your favorite ice cream? What is your go-to ice cream in the time of need?
Now, are you talking going out to a local store or just at home?
Up to you, my friend. You answer the question any way you want.
All right. Well, I'm going to just give a plug. As you know, I'm a big Peaceful Meadows fan. So I will admit my favorite is their peppermint patty turned into a frap. I love that. As far as at home, you know, something I really have gotten into is I like the Friendly's cookie dough, but the chocolate cookie dough. That's a good feel-good flavor at home.
Got sprinkles or Jimmy's?
Jimmy's.
Right, there he is. Rob Hackler, I guess. Rob, thank you very much for joining me and giving us an update and kind of a look over the past year and dealing with the pandemic, and also talking about the three radio stations collectively under the hat of, or under the flag of 95.9 WATD. And again, thank you for being a great colleague and all that you do to provide information, not only you, but also the WATD news team and all the staff at ATD, MEX, and WBMS. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been great to be back on the program today. I love your show, and thank you for acknowledging all the hats I wear, especially as my hair has been thinning. So thank you.
One hat. One head, so many hats. I don't know how he does it. Rob Hackler. Well, folks, that is all the time. I told you we were going to try to finish up strong, and I really think we did. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.